Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As the world struggles with the threat of pandemic, along with all of the attendant fear and uncertainty, there is a great deal to be learned from the past, because communicable disease has haunted humanity for all of history. As such, the responses to coronavirus in our midst have a grimly timeless quality. In fact, to one scholar, epidemics are a great lens for peering into the values, temperament, infrastructures, and moral structures of the societies they attack. Frank Snowden is a professor emeritus of the history of medicine at Yale University and author of Epidemics and Society, From the Black Death to the Present. An epidemic, he writes, holds a mirror to the civilization.
The bubonic plague in the 14th century shows what are our relationships to our fellow human beings. You read in Boccaccio about the terror from the plague. Husband left wife and vice versa. Parents fled their children. One can see the scapegoating, the search for a demonic influence. This is not something that we ourselves did, of course. It's always some other group or person that we want to blame. The hunt for witches, pogroms against Jews, xenophobia unleashed societies coming to a halt. It's something that seems, alas, to be with us since the very beginning. We can see it in homophobia, in the American epidemic of HIV/AIDS, and the assault on Asian people today.
I want to move on to a more modern infection, bedeviling Napoleon. Let's start with his invasion of Russia in 1812, where his superior armies were overrun not by the Tsar's troops, so much as what?
Oh, dysentery and typhus. His military tactics were predicated on lightning strikes and sudden rapid movement. He wanted his army not to be laden down with supplies and with food, but to live off the land. And so he marched an army that was 500,000 men. Imagine the whole city of Paris going into Russia, and Napoleon having decided not to take medical supplies, bandages, or sanitary precautions of any kind at the time. And so they went into Russia, marching for this vast distance in what was the immediate creation of what we might call a terrible urban slum, living in the dung of the animals and that they themselves made, drinking water that was polluted in the rivers. And very soon they were immersed in a tremendous outbreak of dysentery that was killing something like 3,000 men a day. Then after Moscow, Napoleon finally decides that they can't survive a winter in Moscow. He has to return to France. Napoleon himself took off in a sled with a bodyguard and abandoned his troops. Only about 10 to 15,000 returned to France, and almost all of those 480,000 or so died of first the dysentery and then the typhus. And there was regime change in France, and disease had a major role in that.
In the midst of coronavirus, you're thinking of Napoleon and feeling a bit of deja vu.
I think about Napoleon a lot because it seems that he's a model of how not to react to the threat of disease that was about to overwhelm the 500,000 men he was commanding and the larger society and empire for which he was responsible. He reacted by doing something that sounds very similar to the present day, by saying it was false facts. We don't need to think about these diseases. We're going to march on ever forward. So Napoleon seems to be someone who had contempt for the impact of the environment, nature, disease, and the threat that it posed, not willing to think of this in terms of planning and mobilizing resources and deploying them in the way that people with knowledge and science and the lessons of history all urge should be done.
And to your earlier point, he seems to take as a personal political assault the behavior of microbes.
Napoleon took great umbrage that a disease could harm the almighty emperor of the French.
Well, on the subject of politicization of pathogens, the Spanish influenza pandemic of 1918 and 1919 killed more than 50 million people around the world. But in this country, officials soft-pedaled the threat. Evan Osnos in The New Yorker talked about a political appointee named Wilmer Cruzan, a city public health director, who called the killer flu, quote, old-fashioned influenza or grip. And the news organizations played along. One headline in the Philadelphia Inquirer was scientific nursing halting epidemic, when in fact the truth on the ground was horrifyingly different.
There is a tendency of some people, when confronted by something new, not to admit that they don't understand, but instead to label it something different that they think that they can manage. That seems to me the story in Philadelphia and the story before us today.
I want to turn to 1995 and the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and then 8 years later in rural Guinea in West Africa. Mm-hmm. The first response, at least in the West, was absolutely ignoring what was a significant, fairly localized public health crisis. And then, once it came to Western shores, in very small number of cases, suddenly hysteria.
The world wanted to turn its back on West Africa. It was Doctors Without Borders that got first involved, and they pleaded for the intervention of outside nations. And this, they said, was the potential of a regional or even a pandemic outbreak. The World Health Organization sat on its hands. The American government did nothing until a physician and a nurse who were American and white working in West Africa were stricken with Ebola and brought back to the States. And suddenly there was this wave of horror. Oh no, this can affect not just Africans, but white people. It did lead at last to large-scale intervention medically in West Africa, but it took an infection to invade white and American bodies before people could take it as something that had to be dealt with. That seems to me a really depressing moment in human history.
And now we come to coronavirus, which seems to be playing out as scapegoating, xenophobia, opportunistic denial. Medicine and epidemiology have advanced incalculably over the centuries. Has human behavior begun to catch up?
We can see different actors in this drama espousing different solutions. The denial impulse, the blame impulse, the attachment to ethnic barriers, to national barriers. But we also see Dr. Tedros of the WHO.
That's Tedros Adhanom, the Director General of the World Health Organization.
And lots of other people at NIH and the CDC and around the world in health ministries who are taking a scientific and community-based approach to the disease, that it's about education, about involving the populace, it's about taking care of the entire globe. That is to say, resources have to be deployed not where there's money, but where there's need. And so masks and respirators and ventilators need to be moved to the place where they're required, not where there are people with lots of money to purchase them, whether or not they're needed. Dr. Tedros is having a very hard time getting the industrial world to release, for example, the funds to carry out a general international cooperative effort. And what does that say about us? Virologists all around the world have been expecting an event of this kind, saying it was inevitable. So why is it we weren't prepared? Bruce Aylward, coming back from China, was asked, what is it that we need to do to be more prepared? He said, the first thing we need to do is to change our mindsets and begin to act in an international, coordinated way based on truth and science, learning the lessons of history. It's not just a technical question of having a magic bullet, a vaccine. This is something that lies below that. The question is, are we willing and prepared to take up that challenge?
Frank, thank you so much.
Great pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Frank Snowden is a professor emeritus of the history of medicine at Yale University and author of Epidemics in Society, From the Black Death to the Present.
Coming up, the run-up to Super Tuesday and its aftermath left the Democratic field littered with broken dreams.
This is On the Media.